Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
It's John Pollock, and today we are presenting you a sample of our recent edition of The Double Shot, covering the documentary Video Killed the Radio Star, covering Bubba the Love Sponge, Hulk Hogan, and the sex tape scandal. On this show, I'm joined by David Bixenspan from the Between the Sheets podcast and a reporter who covered the Hulk Hogan versus Gawker trial extensively. We spoke about the entire doc, what was included, what was not included, and going deep into a lot of the key figures associated with this story. For the entire edition of The Double Shot, which is nearly 2 hours covering this documentary, consider signing up for the Post Wrestling Cafe over at patreon.com/postwrestling, where you get multiple shows per week for your subscription. This is pretty much a Bubba the Love Sponge production of the sex tape scandal, so it is going to be very skewed toward that viewpoint. There are some significant omissions, I would say. Like, you to watch a 2.5 hour documentary and like the racist aspect of the tape is not broached once is a very deliberate decision on Bubba's part of, you know, that it is, we are not going to go into that avenue of things, which I mean is really the crux of that tape. And to me, what represents the biggest damages to the reputation of Hulk Hogan is not so much the act of being caught on tape having sex. It is the dialogue that followed the sexual activity.
Well, it's why the people who stole the recordings and did the blackmail, it's why everything played out that way. The idea was they would send, because there were three videos, they would send one to Gawker that had some damaging conversation in it and use that as leverage in trying to extort Hogan about the other video that had the racist comments in it. Like, that was explicitly their strategy. This, like, it's gone over and, you know, and all the files from the investigation stuff. Like, that was what they were trying to do. And they even, you know, Keith Davidson, the sex tape broker, even kind of says that in his conversation with Hogan and his lawyer. So, like, it is really important to a lot of the story they're telling, and it's just not in there.
So take me back to 2012 when this first breaks. Where are you kind of writing for at the time? And tell me just a bit about some of your coverage initially when it's just the clip that becomes available.
October 2012, I may not have been doing writing. That may have been strictly when I was just assignment editing at Bleacher Report. Because I don't recall writing anything about this at the time. And I don't
Is it the trial that you start extensively covering the story? It's closer to that.
Well, the lawsuit, yes. And what basically, once the lawsuit started getting more publicity again in advance of the originally scheduled trial date in summer 2015, and then you started seeing, you know, people like media reporters like Peter Stern covering how you know, Gawker had to file a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the FBI and all that. And it sort of got me more interested and thinking, like, you know, when this thing goes to trial, which eventually ended up being in March 2016, I bet it's going to blow up then, which it did. And I was thinking, you know what? Like, I should really try to familiarize myself with everything as much as possible. And you know what? Make a point of covering this as well as possible once the trial happens. And, you know, and in my case, like, lo and behold, the fact that I was so well prepared got me very noticed outside of wrestling circles and in you know, New York and Florida media circles, and it completely changed my life and career. You know, it was like, it was what, like 2 months later that I had a part-time job writing for Dan Abrams at Law News, which is now Law and Crime.
And did you feel that, like, did you feel like uniquely prepared in that you understood like the wrestling component attached to Hulk Hogan and this figure that, you know, to many covering him, he's really just this ex-wrestler, reality celebrity. Like, what do you feel was like your unique way of approaching this that, you know, a lot of others, I don't think they understood that component and this unique figure that is Hulk Hogan and wrapped up in all of this.
That's part of it, but a lot of it was just having the time and taking the opportunity to dig into as much of the records as possible and understand what was going on. And I don't even remember the specifics, but I remember one of the things where people really started to notice my coverage was when it came out that Bubba wasn't going to testify and, you know, the details that had come out of his settlement with Hogan, and a lot of that wasn't well known, and a lot of people were pointing to that. So at that point, yeah, I think most of what I was writing, if I was writing articles, was for SE Scoops. And yeah, and that got a lot of attention. And I mean, one of the things that was kind of funny that, and I don't know if this stuff would have landed as much without this. I'm forgetting her name now, but one of the local Tampa reporters was using a hashtag for everything from the trial coverage on Twitter, hashtag Hulk versus Gawk, and some other reporters who were covering the trial started using it, and I started using it, but it was basically just reporters who were doing active coverage who were using it. So because you had mainly like media people following that hashtag, that allowed me to kind of get ahead and get noticed in that sense. Like at one point I was told there that Gawker on like the big screen that they had previously used for like page views and stuff that they repurposed once they weren't using that for like bonuses or anything anymore, that they had like a live Twitter feed, and I believe it was specifically they were following the CNN reporter, one of the local Tampa reporters, and me. And I remember hearing that and being like, geez, okay, well, I'm getting noticed the way I meant to, I guess.
Well, let's talk a little bit about just the structure of this. So this documentary is broken up into 14 chapters. I don't know if you noticed this, but what precedes chapter one is the text, part one. We never get to part two, and God only knows if we're going to get a follow-up to this documentary. Was this just the first blow from Bubba's camp?
Well, at least it had chapters on, like, American Canto.
So the early portion is kind of just the origin story of Bubba the Love Sponge growing up in Indiana. A heartwarming story that, you know, he was the type of kid that would range from writing the word fuck in the school bathroom to eating his mother's birth control pills and putting a cat and 10 pounds of potatoes into the washing machine together. You know, kid stuff.
I'm just trying to understand why that specific combination was what it was.
These are the actions of a young Bubba the Love Sponge who would then eventually grow up to have a major controversy involving animal cruelty, and
which they cover.
They do cover this. I mean, this is not like this does not cover Bubba's controversies that he has establishing himself as kind of the preeminent like shock jock radio host in the Tampa Wars, which sounds like that could be its own sort of spinoff. Is just this radio scene in Tampa and how cutthroat they make it out to be here. And it kind of materializes in this war to just get these guys like canceled, basically, is the fight here. That I guess we can start with this is Mike Calta, which is a name that is one of the prominent figures in this entire story. He, for obvious reasons, is not interviewed in this documentary. But do you want to explain who Mike Calta is as it relates to Bubba the Love Sponge's history and relation to the sex tape?
Did they use the Cowhead nickname for him once in the documentary?
They didn't. I can't remember. Like, I do have the Cowhead here thing written in my nickname, written down here, but I don't know if they actually did call him that or not.
So, yeah, I mean, you were actually actively taking notes. So, I mean, honestly, this may be better. So he was just someone who was, he was one of the various Bubba Orbit characters who,
but he worked in promotions and then, yes. Bubba gets moved to Morning Drive. And then I guess Calta becomes his co-host and producer in
But then eventually gets his own show.
Yeah.
And there ends up being, it doesn't seem like there was like openly a rivalry or anything like that, but it seems pretty clear that at least to some degree, Calta was jealous and didn't like Bubba.
Yeah. And when he hires this other producer, Brent Hatley, who is all over this documentary, and he's one of the producers of this documentary, he comes on board, and Calta is removed from Bubba's show. And of course, Calta goes on to have his own radio career. But at this point, there's this kind of simmering rivalry that at least is presented in the documentary. And you also have the introduction of Matt Lloyd, who was Spice Boy on Bubba's show, who dropped out of high school and kind of becomes like their, like, I don't know, like jackass character on the show. I never listened to Bubba the Love Sponge, so I'm not in tuned with the Bubba Army culture.
Oh, you were never big into Florida shock shocks while you were at home in Toronto?
I'm here to share all my here to reveal that no, I was not up on my Tampa radio scene of the mid 90s. But Spice Boy emerges as sort of one of Bubba's minions, and he too eventually. These two essentially are accused of being sort of the masterminds behind this sex tape getting out, which, I mean, Calta has been adamant that he had nothing to do with this. But, man, they present a pretty strong case against these two as being the brains behind this whole DVD getting out.
Yeah. So, like, Lloyd, I mean, I don't think it's really in dispute that he was the person who actually stole the DVDs and was the primary person involved. Like, I don't think it's possible, you know, between what we have from the police reports and the FBI investigation and, you know, then the stuff that Hogan got in discovery from his, you know, the radio personality centric lawsuit that he filed. Like, it seems pretty clear. Like, and then knowing that the woman who they actually had meet with Hogan was a friend of Lloyd and his wife and all that, and all the other details that come out from interrogating her. Like, the central thing ends up being why was nobody prosecuted, which we'll get to. But yeah, Lloyd, I think you have to say, like, I don't think there's any doubt there. I mean, Calta is a little less. Calta was not involved with the original theft, it doesn't seem like. But based on the emails they have and the phone records and the way they're able to tie the times to it, it seems pretty clear that he was involved with the scheme of getting it to Gawker.
Yeah, he really
maybe
feels
it was
like
just that part, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, he's really painted here as like the middleman that is, you know, getting the DVDs to AJ Delario that they have in these emails with the calls that you're kind of left to, you know, draw your own conclusion to, but they really, you know, they do a fairly effective job of connecting those dots.
Yeah. Yeah. And Calta also, his name comes up in some of the records of people in Florida radio who were sending around like the rough, like transcripts of the DVDs and stuff like that. So he was in the loop on all that as well. And where do we jump in before to next on this? I mean, I do want to say I thought the like Who is Bubba Tampa radio part of every documentary was really well done. Like, I felt like
I thought this was the best part of the documentary, to be honest, Bix. Like, I was more interested in this whole, like, Tampa radio scene because I thought it was, like, really interesting just to see this market and this, like, cutthroat, you know, competition that all these hosts were having at the time. Like, this is, you know, this is very, like, you know, Bubba is, you know, he was kind of, like, the king in this market, and I don't think that's just, you know, the way that he's painted here. Like, that's how this turned out. And I thought, like, this first chapter of, like, setting things, I found it to be, like, really interesting.
And I thought it was tighter in terms of just the editing and everything than the other sections of the documentary as well. Like, there, it didn't feel like there was any real, like, wasted space or time. And I thought if you were somehow someone who arrived at this documentary not knowing who Bubba was, which, because of the distribution for the foreseeable future, is not going to be anyone, but let's just say that person existed, if this eventually ends up on, you know, a Tubi or whatever, where someone could just stumble onto it, it does a really good job of establishing who Bubba is and giving the context of the whole, you know, Central Florida radio scene.
Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst Of show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Yeah, and just to sort of paint the picture of how he gets to Howard 101 and where he is at the time of the whole issue going down with Hogan and Heather, is they do a bit that is called the Roadkill Barbecue. And he ends up facing felony animal cruelty charges, where this state attorney, Mark Ober, is trying to prosecute him. And this has been a target of Bubba's on the air. And basically, they are playing on the radio. They are incorporating sound effects to make it seem like they are torturing these animals, which they were killing these roadkill anyway.
But they were killing them they were killing the animals in the ways you would normally kill an animal for that purpose.
Like, it was not like animal torture. It was
my understanding is it was fairly obvious that he was just playing sound effects.
I mean, they face an indecency fine of $755,000 that they claim to be the highest FCC fine ever. And he's fired by Clear Channel. This is right before the Super Bowl in 2004, which is the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake performance. And they kind of paint Bubba as the original. This was the victim of, this was the original cancel culture, as Brent Hatley puts it. And Howard Stern, who of course has migrated over to Sirius at this point, has launched Howard 101 and makes Bubba his afternoon guy. And so for a period, Bubba is just on Howard 101, and then he is ingratiated again in Tampa. And for a period, he's doing two shows a day in, like, the local Tampa radio, and he's doing Howard 101. This is like only booking two territories at the same time. And this is probably the peak. Like, would you say at his peak, how national of a figure do you feel Bubba the Love Sponge was? Because you'd have a better sense of it than I would, I think.
I would say not much, really. Yeah. I mean, you have to remember, too, like, I mean, this is, I mean, at least much of what we're talking about, is it before the SiriusXM merger? When did they merge?
Oh, gosh, I want to say it was, like, later in the 2000s before they merged.
I'm checking. Okay, it was announced in 07. They officially completed it in 08. The reason I mention that is because, Sirius, I mean, for the first several years of satellite radio, I would say Sirius was not doing nearly as well and was not nearly as ubiquitous as XM, even with Howard Stern there, You know, the gap started to close some, and then they merged, and they were all the same company. But even then, it's not like XM was that big, you know, like, unless you were specifically like a fan of an Opie and Anthony or whoever, like, you weren't really going to be into or hearing about most of this stuff. So, I mean, I would say, like, yeah, like, just a niche figure. I would say he was probably still best known in Florida, like, overall.
For wrestling fans, it was just, this was the guy that was like Hulk Hogan's like go to when he needed to get something out there.
Yes. And yeah, I would say, yeah, it's at that time, yes. Like, it's either Tampa area or wrestling fans, because as they get into in the documentary, he was just calling the show all the damn time.
This was so funny. They talk about like Hogan is just obsessed and he's calling in daily, and they're at one point this producer Brent Hatley is stating that Hogan would start calling in multiple times per day, and it became bad radio, and he suddenly just, you know, and he is ramping up all the promotion for Brooke at this point, so he has that impetus as well. But I think this was a guy that just loved having this outlet in, like, here's a guy that's got a powerful reach in Tampa in my home market, and he had an open line, and Bubba was going to just open the doors for this guy to basically take over his show, it sounded like. I had no idea to the extent that Hogan was appearing on this show, and it seemed like it was like to the point that it had more than jumped the shark with the vibe of the show.
Yeah, and the degree to which they were intertwined back then, and then becoming, you know, best friends. And like, I thought the documentary really, I mean, I think they illustrated it well from the perspective of the show. I feel like they honestly could have done a better job, you know, giving the full picture of what like their personal friendship was like, because I felt like outside of the footage from Bubba's wedding, they didn't really do that. But, you know, we know stuff like, you know, Bubba was in the room when Hogan's father died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were that close. And I feel
he's the godfather of Bubba's son as well.
Yes. Yeah, so I feel like they could have done a little bit more to flesh that out. Because, like, I feel like if you came into this cold, I think it would come off like this really like fleeting celebrity friendship thing otherwise. But when you know more about it, like about Hogan's dad and all that, I think it comes off a lot differently.
For this entire episode of The Double Shot, consider going over to postwrestlingcafe.com and signing up.
To listen to the rest of this podcast, consider becoming a member at postwrestlingcafe.com.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.